Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hello, I'm Mika Simmons, and welcome to this very, very special episode of the Happy Vagina podcast in partnership with Venus. Coming up, we have Venus ambassador Alex Light, body confidence campaigner and self-esteem razor. Speaking of razors, we delve deep into how she uses the new Venus razor to give herself the very best pubic shave. But before we go there, I'd like to tell you a little bit about our sponsors. This episode of the Happy Vagina podcast has been brought to you by Venus. Venus, the number one female razor brand in the world, is introducing a new way to care for your pubic hair and skin with the new Venus for Pubic Hair and Skin collection. Despite many women regularly removing their pubic hair, many don't feel comfortable discussing pubic grooming or the issues they face when doing so. Although nearly three quarters of women believe that they should be able to use words like vagina and pubic in public without feeling shame, nearly half of women say they've been made to feel these aren't appropriate words to use in public. With the new range, Venus wants to legitimise conversations about the pubic area, to remove the taboo around pubic language and grooming, encouraging women to free the vulva, that's hashtag free the vulva, and speak openly and honestly about their pubic hair and skin. Welcome to The Happy Vagina, a podcast dedicated to celebrating pioneers in the female space who have made a difference in women's health, equality, and relationships. Each week, we chat to an inspiring human as they explore the experiences that completely change their outlook, promising not only to educate, but also to entertain and enlighten. And in this week's special episode, we are joined by body confidence and anti-diet culture campaigner, Alex Light. Alex spends her life helping women feel better about their bodies. She talks openly about her relationship with diet culture, eating disorders and disordered eating. Alex, welcome to the Happy Vagina.
Oh, I'm so excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
As I mentioned, you are a body confidence campaigner, and that's almost a new terminology. We had Stephanie Yeboah on season two, who really explained to me the history of body positivity and how actually that was a movement within the Black communities. And you've really honoured that, haven't you?
Yeah, I absolutely try to honour that as much as I can. It's difficult because the two spaces are so closely linked, and they have been so... they've been combined really by the media, which is, I think, is a real shame, because as you said, that movement, body positivity, was started by Black fat women, for Black fat women, and it's, you know, a shame now to see that message sort of include thin white women who are not pushed to the margins of society. So I try and make that distinction as much as possible and sort of stay in my lane. And I try to, you know, let those women who do face fat phobia and racism, let them speak for themselves on these issues and try and sort of uplift their voices on these issues as much as I can.
When was the first moment that you heard that, because actually I didn't know, I think maybe I'd seen a little bit about it, but Stephanie really enlightened me. Do you remember the first moment that you sort of heard and understood that body positivity was something that as a white body campaigner you shouldn't be using as a terminology? Do you remember when you first understood that?
Good question. And actually it was in an article. So I think I was researching articles to write for Hello Magazine around body positivity, and I found an article about why thin white women shouldn't be aligning with the body positive movement. And I was like, what? And at first I felt I almost felt a bit defensive, like, well, why can't everyone be involved in this message? Everyone has their own struggles. And I started to delve into it and realize, like, actually, this is incredibly important to make the distinction between the two. It's vital for, you know, thin white women cannot take over this movement, because then where's a safe space for people who, you know, genuinely need it?
So body confidence is your is your tag, your handle, your thing. Thank God. Thank you for what you're doing in the space, Alex. It's really important, particularly for the young women coming through, that they have I'm going to say icons. I mean role models.
Love it.
Icons like you. But I just wondered if you could tell me a bit about what that identity means to you.
Yeah, good question. So for me, I think that those identities mean kind of breaking free of the constraints that society has placed on us, mostly women, for so long. And these, you know, these constraints are arbitrary, you know, rules and standards that have been enforced on us, like having to be thin, or as we're going to get into, you know, having a completely hair-free body. And I want to help women feel good and confident in their own skin and their own bodies exactly as they are. But like, that doesn't mean that I'm not against women changing their bodies, because I think it's incredibly important to have full body autonomy and also the means of self-expression, whatever that might look like for, you know, for some people that might be makeup. For me, for example, I absolutely adore makeup and I wear it most days, even if I'm not going out, just because I love it. Like, me sitting down to do my makeup is like a form of therapy. But anyway, but it can look like, you know, makeup to some people, or it could look like, you know, even aesthetic body goals or shaving. And I think the distinction that I really try to make is to find out why that we do these things, and is it to conform to this arbitrary standard placed on us, on our shoulders, by a society that profits from our insecurities, or is it because we want to do something for us to feel more comfortable, for self-expression, or just because we want to? So yeah, I try and encourage us people to explore their why and the reasoning behind it. And even if it does, even if your reasoning is conforming to societal standard, like, that's okay too. But I think that acknowledging it and talking about it allows you to explore it and eventually, potentially, explore your own true desires as well, if any of that makes sense.
It makes tons answer. Of sense. It makes sense. So you're so on brand for the happy vagina, this idea of autonomy, actually, and having agency over our own choices, but making sure that we've dug deep and understand why we're making them, and whether or not we're making them for the right reasons, and whether or not we are honouring our highest goddess within the decision.
And also, I love that.
Also, like, just deeply recognising that it can change. Like, not you from day to day, from year to year. I had this great conversation with Jess Megan, and she said, I don't know about you, Mika, but basically I've really grown into my campaigner woman. And I just thought, oh yes, that's true. That's absolutely true. Yeah. Because when I started the Lady Garden Foundation 7 years ago, I called it Lady Garden because I didn't want to say the word vagina. And now I'm out there going, we have to say vagina as much as possible. So we all change and grow.
So it's so true. And I think, you know, we don't want to be wrong and we don't want to change our mind. But the truth is that we're so fallible and we make mistakes all the time. And also we evolve and grow so much as well. So it's okay to change our mind. And it's okay to say that, you know, that wasn't right for us back then, but it's right for us now. And I think that's really important as well. And part of, I believe, like a big part of feminism as well. At least it is for me, like having that ability to assess and analyze and change your mind and change your beliefs and be okay with that.
Yeah. And the bottom line is that the reason that we lock ourselves down or other people down into these perceived categories, that person is that, or I am this person, is to try and feel safe. But anyone who's done any kind of spiritual investigation knows that the true safety the deepest safety lies in not knowing. To be able to say, I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, is actually much safer than saying, I know everything and I am this person and defining ourselves. You have had a journey. So just reflecting what we're saying, this woman that I am speaking to now has been through quite a journey to get to be this woman who may change again next year. But can you just tell us a little bit about your journey for people who may not have read about you or heard about it?
Definitely. So my journey to get here has been, or at least it feels like it's been long, very long and difficult, because I initially struggled with disordered eating and extreme dieting and trying every diet under the sun. And eventually it all led to an eating disorder, which had me in its grip for most of my 20s, all of my 20s, actually. Mm. And I always had this just pure hatred of my body and the skin I was in. I just constantly felt like I wanted to crawl out of my own skin, and I just hated the way I looked. I believed that I wasn't thin enough, that I wasn't this enough and that enough, and that, you know, I had to lose weight essentially to become, you know, happy and desirable and successful and healthy. Like, that was my overall kind of the belief that clouded everything. And it was only as I started to recover, which was long, my recovery was really long. And I always note that, because I think it's important to note, because we hear too many stories about recovery being like quick and simple and, you know, gets help and recovers. And it's often not the case, like, at all. It was really long and hard for me and absolutely not linear. And I learned a hell of a lot along the way. And my eyes were open to diet culture and a society that profits from our insecurities, literally profit off. And I started to understand why we feel so insecure about our bodies and why we collectively have this incredibly low, you know, incredibly bad body image. And especially with young girls. And I just started to want to rebel against it. And the more I learned about it, the more the angrier, I guess, I became, and frustrated with the grip that this has on so many women. Like, just like I'd say the majority of women, you know, they might not be their lives might not be impacted day to day by it, but in some way they are impacted by diet culture. And so I just started to campaign against it more and more and learn about it, more resources. And yeah, so now I'm fully, fully dedicated to it, and just kind of obsessed, I would say is the word, with like wanting to make women feel better and good in their own skin and not be tied to this idea that we need to be thin or we need to look a certain way in order to achieve goals or find a partner or you know, have success, because it's just not true.
It's really difficult. I mean, I would say that I'm a bit of a warrior, definitely a feminist to the core, and I've got a date tonight. I'll let you know how it goes.
Ooh, that's exciting.
And one of my first thoughts was, oh, I need to lose weight for it. Like, it's just so, it's so ingrained in our, and I was like, oh, Mika, stop it. You know, because the shame that we have around our bodies starts from a very young age. Actually, for all human beings, we have a deep-rooted shame about our bodies, which is, considering we've been put on this earth as, you know, God's children, I think very sad. But for women, it is, as you've just said, and you talked about at the very beginning of this podcast, it's really, it penetrates the core of being a woman that somehow or other we have to change. I think it's Gloria Steinem who said boys are taught to make their bodies strong to go out, and girls are taught from a very young age to change their bodies. You know, right. And I love that you talked about enjoying makeup. But the truth is that it's even from that young age, I see my nieces playing with makeup. I'm all for it. I don't judge it. I'm not saying it shouldn't happen. But it is just interesting for me how the genders start to be funneled into specific.
Right.
So women are funneled into, I want to change myself.
Definitely. But you're right. It's like, it's interesting at what point the genders kind of diverge, and that, you know, diet culture is a tool of the patriarchy as well. There's a wonderful quote that I'm probably going to butcher now, but it's, diet culture keeps women facing the mirror rather than the world. And I think that's just spot on, you know. Yeah. It stops us from going out and achieving things that we could, like big, huge things that we could achieve if we put our mind to it, rather than have us focused on making our bodies as small as possible or making our bodies as flawless as possible.
Yeah. One of the things that actually I just was talking about on a post on the Happy Vagina this week was that I believe that size stigma and shaming of size in our culture is actually a modern day corset. It's a in real life corset. So back in the Victorian era, they used to like tight for fashion. And now the fashion is, it's not a corset anymore, but it's in our heads, which is even worse. And actually, one of the things that's been really beneficial for me in terms of diet culture is understanding that it's actually something that it is in our heads. It's a mental health issue. It's not a food issue.
Right.
I wondered, Alex, I mean, you said so honestly and usefully, I think, about recovery being a long process and an ongoing process. But I wondered if, you know, if there was a moment for you that you just kind of did something happen that actually just made you like, mic drop, tools down, no more, done. And then, of course, I know it will have come back again. But was there a moment that significantly changed your attitude towards yourself, or did it come through in stages?
Yeah, it came through in stages. I always like to think of it as imperceptible bits of progress that all added up to become, to look like recovery and to look like real progress, because I think I was always looking for that like aha moment in recovery, because I'd heard it so many times before, and I had I'm a bit of an obsessive person. Like, when I've got my mind on a subject, I want to just go and learn about it and, you know, immerse myself in it as much as possible. So I'd watched countless videos and documentaries about anorexia recovery and read so many books, and everyone seemed to have this moment where everything clicked just like that and everything made sense from then on, and I was always looking for that and I never had it. So I think that's important to note as well, that even those bits where you don't feel like you're making any progress, and even the bits where you feel like you're falling backwards, the lapses, those are actually incredibly important as well. And for me, I can say honestly that they were the moments where I armed myself with the tools and coping mechanisms to actually fully recover. So I think for me, it was a lot of different things, but something that was incredibly important with body image, not necessarily anorexia recovery, but body image, what was really pivotal was finding an anti-diet culture community. People online, discovering people who looked like me, and also people of all different shapes and sizes and races and genders, who were totally unapologetic about how they looked and confident and comfortable in their own skin. And that gave me the confidence I then needed to begin to tackle my own insecurities and my issues with my body image, and understand that the way I felt about my body, that it needed to be flawless, that it needed to be thin, was it was conditioning. You know, like you said, it's in the mind. It's conditioning by a society that had something to gain from making me feel that way. It wasn't innate. And recognizing that was so powerful for me. And also recognizing, you know, seeing people who look like me and me thinking, she looks great, she looks amazing, like, cool, like, and what, like, she looks great, and that's all there is to it. And me realizing that I could say that about someone who had a fairly similar body to me, but I couldn't say that about myself. And I think that was a really important moment for me as well, like realizing that indicates that it's in my mind. It's a problem within my mind, it's not a problem with my body. So I think that was really important as well.
That's, thank God, for social media, Alex.
Thank God for social media. I know. I mean, I know it has its downsides. It definitely has its downsides. And there is some, like, you know, there it can be detrimental in many ways. But it is incredible for, you know, opening people up to communities of like-minded people. Yeah. And, you know, for us able, like, because we only had the media before that. And that created the narrative around body image and around everything, really. But now we can steer our own narrative and create our own narrative with social media, which is incredible. Mm. And definitely, I think...
Well, we can steer our own narrative and we can also campaign. One of the things that I really love about it is that, you know, a young woman in a school who only has the 50 mates at school with her following her, if she wants to use social media to have a voice, it's so liberating. And, you know, in a way that anyone living outside of a kind of a media bubble didn't have a voice before. And it's just, it's so exciting. It can also be incredibly detrimental. But in terms of campaigning, Alex, you've turned your sights and your voice to pubic hair. And this is the Happy Vagina. And we are huge fans of talking about anything to do with gynecological health, obviously. And I just wondered, before we start talking about bush or no bush, hair or no hair, shaving, which I do, I wondered if we could just talk a little bit about your own personal experience with your gynae health, because I've had struggles with food all my life, and I think it's definitely impacted my sex life, in the sense that I think that it can take away from our sensuality, but it can also, if you do struggle with anorexia to a very severe extent, it can impact your periods. And I just wondered kind of whether or not your journey has impacted your relationship to your gynae health, your vagina, your all of that area of your body, hairier.
Yeah.
All of that. I am so on brand.
So on brand.
All of that hair of your body. If it did impact
word.
It and actually where you're at with it today, like, you know, what's that journey been like for you?
Yes. So I think that that sort of shame around my body applied to all areas of my body, you know, not just how thin I was or how much cellulite I had, but my vagina as well. I grew up in a really reserved household, and I have four sisters as well, but we never, ever, ever discussed anything to do with vaginas. If it ever had to be referred to, which was very rare, it was simply known as down there, like just down there. And that was it, you know? And I think I kind of saw that attitude reflected back at me in society too. I was very aware that vaginas and vulvas were a taboo subject, and it led to, for me, to a lot of misunderstanding, I think, and misinformation around the pubic area. And I think that's actually the case for many, many women, because we don't talk about it, because it's taboo to talk about it, which is crazy, which is just wild, because it's literally a part of our body. And it's just wild to me that there is just so much taboo around it. And I think because of that, because there is that taboo, we don't have this open and honest discussion around it. So therefore, I had just no idea what was normal, what wasn't normal. I mean, when I first developed pubic hair, I was like, oh my God, what is this? I was horrified. I was like, oh no, this is awful. You know, because I'd never had the conversation, and no one had ever said to me, that's normal. That's what happens when you enter puberty. And I was just really taken aback and really disgusted by it. It's like shameful about it as well. And same with periods, really. I mean, I was quite late to get my period, and I was too scared to tell anyone that I hadn't had it yet. I was too embarrassed. So I just said that I had already had my period, and then I just pretended, you know, to be on my period. I just think, like, I'm so happy now that there is
you know, people like you doing this wonderful podcast and talking openly about these issues, and Venus, who are opening the conversation and you know, campaigning to free the vulva, which I love. And I just think it's so incredibly important, because it doesn't do any good to have this subject be a taboo, and for there to be then, you know, no dialogue around it. I think that's really damaging for girls.
Do you want to know what's really interesting?
Is that
we couldn't be, in terms of, I mean, I feel we're kindred spirits, just put that there, but like we couldn't. So I had a feminist mother who had vagina examining workshops in our home.
Wow.
I have a brother, no sisters, and I got my periods very early.
Right.
And I can tell you, Alex, that I did exactly the same as you. I lied and said I didn't have my periods.
Really?
I was mortified when the pubic hair came through because I didn't know what it was. So what I think we're actually coming to here in this conversation is a deep realization that actually our stories, our family stories, are not potentially the real issue. I think there's something much, much deeper underneath it. And this is our base chakra as women. This area of our body is the most sacred part of our, for all human beings, actually.
Yeah.
For every human being, this is where life comes from, for men and for women. This is where life comes from. And somehow or other, I would suggest through religious texts and also through historical shaming and confusion and fear of that area of the body, fear of the menstrual cycle, you know, fear of men's desire potentially. But I think that it's potentially much deeper than our family histories. And I've only just realized that from you're sharing, you're telling me these things. I'm going, but I did that, but I did it the opposite way around. So there must be something much deeper going on here.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
And I think that the area that we're in is talking about shaming. And one of the things that I wanted to speak to you about specifically is, and it comes to hair and removing pubic hair. So thank you for mentioning Venus, and because Venus are bringing out a specific razor for shaving your vagina area, your pubic bone area, and which I'm really excited about. I've used Venus since they came out. So because they weren't around, but my first experience of shaving was as a teenager. My mother came into the bathroom and I was shaving my legs, and she went absolutely ballistic. My feminist mother. She was like, "Really? Yeah," because I was shaving the back of the top of them. You don't do that. It grows the hair back, etc. Anyway, she then actually went off and chatted to loads of her female friends, and because my mother was a true feminist, she came back to me and she apologized.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And she said that she was sorry that there were women who, I feel really emotional. There's always a moment.
Lovely.
She was such an amazing woman. But she apologized for the fact that she had been so, that she was imposing her feminist beliefs on my teenage, I would suggest, struggles. Because I think when it comes to hair removal, there is an element of us needing to ring fence teenage hair removal. So this conversation that we're about to have, I think that, you know, as a teenager, we need better education for young teenagers so that they aren't falling into the codependent. I removed my leg hair because I was like you, wanting to fit in. essentially, I did it because I wanted to fit in. It wasn't a conscious decision. Yeah. I literally was doing it because everyone else was doing it. And that's quite common for teenagers. Yeah. And that's, we'll leave that one aside just for now, and come back to my mum and the shaming of each other for the things we do, which mum didn't do in the end. But I think in this space of hair removal, because Venus have got this razor coming out, which is specifically for removing your body hair. And one of the things that upsets me the most, Alex, the most, is the shit within the women's movement is the shaming of other people's choices. And I wondered what your thoughts were on that.
Yes, yes. This is, do you know what? This is something I talk about a lot, because it is related, but with diet culture, you know, because I'm anti-diet culture, a lot of people say, well, then you can't be pro weight loss. And I'm like, I am for what women doing whatever they want to their body, whether that means gaining weight, losing weight, shaving their entire body, or letting their hair grow completely, ungroomed completely. I think it's so important. Like, and that to me, I don't know what you think, but to me, that's at the core of feminism to me, is allowing women to do what they want to do without judgment, as long as it's not hurting other people, obviously, or like causing direct harm, but letting them do whatever they want to do with their bodies. I think it's absolutely up to you whether you decide to shave, not shave. It's totally your choice, your body and your choice. But I think it's what I think is really good is that, you know, a lot of women do choose to shave, and so, like you said, we need more education around that, because rather than this be like this taboo thing, like you're supposed to be completely hair free, but we're not really going to tell you how to do it properly. And we're going to leave you being, we're going to leave you quite uncomfortable and not knowing what this is and that is. And, you know, with these ingrown hairs and this irritation and itching, but we don't really care about that. We just want you to be hair free, right? Like that's kind of, at least that's how I felt. Like I'm supposed to be this way, but I don't really know how to do it properly. So that's what I love about what Venus is doing as well, is like opening this conversation up around it and showing us how to actually, if you want to remove your pubic hair, this is how to do it to get the best results and that you aren't uncomfortable.
I think one of the things that I find really difficult in the space of like blaming and shaming is that there is a message around it that it's really interesting because there's this sort of message around removing pubic hair that it's means you're not a feminist, and actually the history and also Playboy magazine gets blamed a lot, but I just need everyone to know that in the 60s and 70s Playboy magazine was all up for the bush, and I wouldn't put it past them to be back for it again, you know, like the bottom line is that it was Darwin who started the movement in hair removal, because Darwin suggested that people without hair were of a higher intellectual status. So from that moment onwards, I have been removing all my hair. But it is, I think that people will latch on to an idea to fight their argument rather than being open-minded. And as I said at the beginning, you know, open-mindedness or not being able to say that we don't know, or deeply accepting, as you've just said, deeply accepting human beings to be who they are at that moment in time, is a phenomenal thing to be able to do, and actually makes for a much happier life, I think. But I just wondered whether or not you think, what do you think still needs to happen in the space of pubic hair? Because the word itself, I was thinking about, this is a pubic service announcement. Mika Simmons, host of The Happy Vagina, was like, oh, pubic. Yeah, that is kind of like, I don't use it.
I don't use it.
Like, we need to reclaim this. And then I was thinking about pubic hair, and I was thinking, what is pubic hair? Is it the same? Why is it so special? What is so different about it? You know, And so I've done my own kind of little introverted chat with myself, which went particularly well. I just wondered what you think needs to happen in the pubic hair space still to get people to feel less frightened. Is the word I'd use, less frightened of it.
Yeah, so I think dialogue, like what we're doing right now, like open and frank discussion of our vaginas, you know, not using like euphemisms and, like you said, reclaiming like the word pubic. Like even saying it still, it still feels odd to hear myself say it because I've just never really said that word. It just still feels so taboo, but there, it shouldn't be taboo. So I think that's incredibly important. And I think, do you know what, there was a really interesting statistic that Venus came out with. So they did a study, and like I think half of respondents, or nearly half, agree that they have been made to feel that the word vagina or pubic are not appropriate terms to use in public, which is wild, right? Because it's, like we said, it's just part of our body. So I think that's really important. The more we, you know, exposure therapy, the more that we talk about it and the more we expose ourselves to it and people are exposed to it, then the less taboo there's going to be around it. I think that brands actually play a huge part in it. And by shying away from calling it what it is, you know, a tool like a razor or a cream or whatever for the pubic area, I think by shying away from it, that only serves to fuel the taboo around it.
Also, I've just had a light bulb moment, Alex, which is that up until now, most of the conversation in and amongst brands around pubic hair, to shave or not to shave, bush or no bush, are the more boutique brands that are actually selling like bush oils and stuff like that. And this is really exciting because this is one of the first brands that is taking that conversation into the space of, it's okay to shave, and it is okay to shave. I shave in between waxing and I really enjoy it. And of course, there's a lot of conversation around the benefits of pubic hair, and there are benefits. It is there for a reason, and there are lesser benefits for removing it. But as we've said, I think that it's about finding your own deepest acceptance with what you want to do, and if you do want to remove it, you should do right. It in a safe way. And can you just tell me a little bit about how the Venus products are going to help that?
I was genuinely chuffed to see these products because I used to go for bikini waxes, and I have really sensitive skin, so bikini waxes for me are, any kind of waxes for me are hell on earth. Absolutely hell on earth. I would dread it. I'd have to take 2 paracetamol and 2 ibuprofen before I went, and the whole time tears streaming down my face. Maybe I just have a very low pain threshold, but I think I have sensitive skin as well. And I was doing all of that because shaving for me has historically been so uncomfortable in the pubic area because I get irritation and I get ingrown hairs and itching as well. I don't know about you, but historically, whenever I would shave, I would just get like horrendous itching in the first few days. So I was really chuffed about these new products because it's like skincare for your pubic area. It's amazing. There's a serum, there's an exfoliant, which actually helps stop the ingrown hairs. And it's like, why have we never been taught this stuff? You know, why didn't we know? Why have we never been taught, like, this is the way that you stop ingrown hairs? Like, you're supposed to exfoliate and it actually helps and maintains the grooming better.
It is weird, isn't it? Because I sort of stumbled on that as well. I used to have one of those body...
Loofers?
No, it's not a loafer. It's like all net. And I,
oh, yeah.
It's actually, to be honest with you, it's just for using with soap to wash your body to get lather. But I worked out about 10 years ago that actually a good scrub after I've had a shave for the next few days stops the ingrown hairs and stops the scrubbing. So I kind of worked that out for myself. Now, I daily... that's a lie. I just told a lie. As much as possible now, I try to dry skin brush, and I always make sure I do that area, particularly if I have shaved. And I've only just realised from what you said that no one taught me that. I had to work that out for myself. So it must be something to do with the fact that no one's honouring shaving. Like, nobody, because let's face it, let's be really honest about it. There's a bit of a war between the bush and the no bush. There is actually a kind of like, and we put that to rest. We've basically put that down. We're not interested in that. But what that potentially has meant is that the strongest voice has been around how to look after your pubic hair, and that no one's been really teaching us how to look after that area if we want to shave. Really interesting. I hadn't quite realized that I'd had to sort of teach myself.
Yeah, you did. I'm like, well done for coming up with that for yourself, because I couldn't. I just turned to waxing because I was just too uncomfortable. And yeah, there's like the new Venus razor as well. It's smaller and has an anti-irritation band as well. But the fact that it's smaller means it can get into all the places that are actually really difficult to get into with a normal size razor, which makes so much sense. It's like, of course.
And does it have some thought behind it in terms of not clipping yourself? So this hasn't ever happened to me, but I did have a girlfriend who shaved, and she did it. So I've been extremely careful ever since whenever I shave. I think she went into her labia. So she didn't, I don't mean she went into with the razor, but I think that she essentially, rather than just taking the hair off from the bikini line, which, by the way, is why people started to remove pubic hair, was because of the advent of the bikini. I don't know if you knew that, but it was exempt from the war. So essentially, in the 1940s, women didn't have stockings because of the war, so they started to shave their legs. And quite soon after that, the bikini was invented, and they'd already started to shave their legs. So then they started to trim the hair where the bikini was, and it became fashion. And I'm going on a bit of a tangent, but I really need to say this. I feel it's a real insult to those women and what they were experiencing at that time for us to say that it's not okay today. Like, we have to really honour history and how different fashions came through. Because I bet at the time when the bikini came in and those women first started removing their pubic hair, they were like, this is so cool. This is like, because it was the first time that anyone had ever done it. So I think it's really important to be deeply respectful of women's journey through history. But
well said, and I've never thought about it like that, but that's a really, really important point, actually.
So important to respect women's history. I find it really annoying when people just completely overrule something that women fought for back then, that was right to be fought for in the movement and the flow that is feminism. But coming back to the razor itself and shaving down there, so I had this really gorgeous girlfriend called Eloise, who's actually moved to Glastonbury to become a witch, which is a whole other conversation. She's so cool.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. She's probably got a bush. Anyways, she's she clipped herself by accident with a razor. And I think this is something that we need to really address, Alex. I think it's really important that women are incredibly careful if they are going to shave their pubic area or go slightly further into giving themselves more of an American or a Brazilian. I don't know what they're all called, but I think it's really important that we do talk about it, because the bottom line is we could say, well, this razor is only for the pubic bone, but the truth is that's not what women do. I definitely take the hair off all around, and I'm incredibly careful about it because I don't want to be like Eloise, and she had a tiny little cut. I know. So tell me what your top tips are for women in terms of shaving to keep themselves really safe around their vulva and the labia and the whole pubic vagina area.
So I actually really enjoy shaving. It's a fun little, it's a nice little sort of calming ritual for me. I make sure that I take my time with it. I'm really slow and careful and considered. And obviously do it in full light as well, so I know exactly what's going on, I can see what's going on. And the Venus's new product as well, the shaving gel, it's actually a clear formula, which is great because it means that you can fully see exactly what's going on.
That's amazing. That's actually really amazing, because the shaving foam I've got at the moment is white and I can't see what I'm doing.
It's a barrier, isn't it?
Yes.
It's actually
that's genius.
It's actually,
Of course.
It is a genius.
Of course, all shaving. Hang on a second. Like, hold on, drop the mic.
Yeah.
Hang on. All shaving gel forever should be
clear. But what I love as well, which is important for me, is that it's fragrance free. Because so, like I told you, like I've got sensitive skin, so I have to be really careful, like what I use on it. So I tend to go for fragrance free stuff, like really gentle formulas, and exfoliation as well. Like we mentioned, exfoliation, I think is really important. That stops the ingrown hairs. It stops some of the irritation as well. And putting something on after, which I think is what people totally forget to do, which I actually didn't know that you should do until relatively recently, to put on a serum afterwards, which can help just like hydrate and also gently exfoliate if it's got an exfoliation in it. I think that's really important as well, just to maintain the area.
It is really important that any products that you use on your vagina area, before anyone tells me that the vagina is not the vulva, but I just want to say to everyone that's listening, in case they hadn't thought about it, there isn't another word for the whole area. I mean, listen, we've now had so many drop the mic moments in this podcast, Alex. I'm like blowing my own mind.
I love it.
Literally, how else do you describe that area of your body? Give me a word. There isn't one. There isn't
vagina.
A word that describes the entire. So when you say your knee, you mean your kneecap and whatever else is in your knee, right? And no one says, wow, you can't call it your knee because it's not really your knee, because because the knee is the name for the whole area of the knee, right? But we don't have,
right.
I mean, you
right.
could say my gynecological area, or you could say my reproductive area, but essentially that's talking about your internal organs. So anyway, for all the haters, so, I mean, we are celebrating Vulva Day, and I'm a bit of a vulva lover, but I think that while it's really important that we deeply understand the anatomy, I also think that vagina is a great word to describe the whole area of your body, and the pH balance, it's really important that you keep it at its neutral, which, do you know, is the same as tomatoes and beer.
No. Is it?
Yeah.
Oh my god, I've learned so much. Amazing.
The pH balance of your vagina is the same as tomatoes and beer, and it's so important because we don't really need it's self-cleansing.
Yeah.
And while these products we're talking about aren't cleansers, they're goddesses, we do need to make sure that they are really not going to create any negative side effects, and you've tried them.
They're fantastic. And all pH balance, which is obviously something you look for as well, like you said.
I just going to put some beer on my vagina. What do you shave with?
Yeah.
I'm using the Venus products. Oh, I'm using tomatoes. Alex, we're running out of time, and I feel really honoured to have had a chat with you today and to be on this journey with fellow warriors like you. And I think just coming back to the beginning of the podcast and our conversation around your primary work before you became a pubic campaigner, as a body confidence campaigner. And if you could say a little bit for our listeners, because I feel like, I know it's a mercurial thing, one's self-esteem, but I feel like you found yours. You may not have it every single minute of every single day, but I feel like you found some freedom, that you found your voice. You mentioned staying in your lane, and I feel like you're in your lane, and the lane is a good lane for Alex Light.
Thank you.
But for anyone who's listening who hasn't found their lane yet and is really still struggling with their self-esteem, can you tell us about some things that have helped you find your freedom and stop the self-loathing?
Definitely. So I feel like this one's almost overused, but I think it's incredibly important. It's always the first thing I say, which is to surround yourself both online and offline with people that make you feel inspired and positive and uplifted. And, you know, I know that's harder in real life, but it's very easy online. And we spend so much of our time online that I think it's vital, absolutely imperative, that we make this experience and we make sure that what we consume is as positive as possible. And if anyone triggers you, makes you feel bad, just unfollow them. If you can't unfollow them, just mute them. The mute button is fantastic. Don't underestimate it. And make sure that your space is just serves you as best that it can. And follow people of all different shapes and sizes. Like I was talking about before, what was actually a pivotal moment for me was following people that looked like me and following people that didn't look like me as well, following people that were in much larger bodies and much smaller bodies. And I think that exposure to all different kinds of people and how the world looks as a whole, rather than just how the media tells us a person is supposed to look. I think exposure to that opens our eyes up to the idea that there's beauty in all different types of sizes and shapes and bodies. It's not just this very narrow standard of beauty that's been enforced upon us. That is not the only type of beautiful. There is so much beauty in the world. And I believe that there's beauty. The real beauty is in diversity, like in having people of all different shapes and sizes. Like, there's a reason we don't all look the same. We're not supposed to. And that's a really cool thing. So I think opening your eyes up to that is really, really important and will really help you start to accept the way you look and appreciate your differences rather than wanting to change yourself to look like a certain celebrity or, you know, changing yourself to fit into that standard of beauty. But make you realize that actually your quirks and your so perceived flaws, I'm putting that in air quotes, are what make you beautiful, what make you unique and diverse. And that's really, really a cool thing. So I think that is my like top tip to anyone. I'll say, like, try and expose yourself to all the beauty in, you know, how people look. There is so much beauty outside of what we are told is beautiful.
Those are amazing. Stay really open-minded, and within that, to thine own self be true. It's like this amazing dichotomy that you can hold the space for deep acceptance of other human beings and still be deeply, quoting Shakespeare, true to yourself. Thank you, Alex.
Love that.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It was an absolute pleasure.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.